This is United Tribes News Radio, insights into Native culture, people, ideas, topics to improve understanding from United Tribes Technical College in Bismarck. The 20th Annual United Tribes Tribal Leaders Summit took place during the time of an unprecedented gathering at Standing Rock. Near the confluence of the Cannonball and Missouri Rivers, hundreds and later thousands of tribal citizens and supporters made camp and launched a challenge to the construction of an oil pipeline. The self-described protectors of the water and sacred sites contested a planned crossing of the Missouri River and Lake Oahe by Dakota Access Pipeline, often referred to by the acronym DAPL. In this program, you'll hear a report from the 2016 Tribal Leaders Summit by Standing Rock Tribal Chairman Dave Archambault II. He describes the legal and social efforts to challenge the pipeline's river crossing only 1 mile upstream from Standing Rock, where it could disturb tribal sacred sites and pose a threat to the tribe's future water quality. He touches on tribal sovereignty, Standing Rock's lawsuit against the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and the peaceful encampment along the Cannonball. And later, you'll hear from other speakers who took part in the fight against DAPL. This special events edition of United Tribes News Radio is a snapshot in time of the group activism opposing the pipeline. Over 200 people were in the audience in the Bismarck Event Center.
Let's welcome our Standing Rock Sioux Tribal Chairman, David Archambault II.
Well, I just want to thank everybody for coming, and it's good to be here. I'll just kind of go through what this is about. About 2 years ago, we were informed that Dakota Access Pipeline was planning on coming close to our area. When we first heard about even just the project, we asked that we be consulted. Would you consult with us? We didn't get responses. We weren't getting responses from the company nor from the Corps of Engineers. It isn't until after the Corps of Engineers says, here's what we're going to do. This is the route that we're taking. Even then we said, this is not consultation. So to help everyone understand what we consider meaningful consultation, we'll say there's four things that we ask. The first one is that we meet with the decision makers. We want to know that we're meeting with the people who are going to make the decision. The second thing is we want to be a part of the plan. Whatever plan it is, we want to take part of it. And the third thing is that we ask that we be heard. Just hear us out. And through that deliberation, the last thing that we ask for is that whatever we talked about, there's some outcome, there's some reflection of our deliberation. And we felt that that never happened. And every time the Corps of Engineers would come forward and say, let's meet, we want to meet with you. Or they would send us a letter, they'd make a phone call to us. We found out later that they are considering all that correspondence consultation. So we have a disagreement in what consultation is. That was the first part of it. The other part of it is, how do these types of projects get processed? Why are these projects that are 1,200 miles long getting processed so fast? And so we start looking at the permitting process. When you look at the permitting process, we believe that you should, the whole entire project should get an environmental impact study. An environmental impact study will determine whether or not this is a doable project. And if that takes place, we'll be able to tell whether or not this is a good route or if it's a viable project. But that didn't happen. What we wanted to get consulted on was NAGPRA, American Council of Historic Preservation, Section 106. Section 106 gives the tribes the opportunity to look at lands that are in the path of a project and determine whether or not they're something significant to us. And it usually ties, it always does tie with federal lands. This project, there are some federal lands, and there's majority of the project is private land. So what the The way it worked is instead of going through Section 106, they did a nationwide permitting process. When it comes to the federal lands, they just do an environmental assessment. This environmental assessment just takes pieces. So wherever there's federal lands, it takes a little piece and it's a procedure. It's a check the box process. We got the first, our environmental assessment draft. This environmental assessment draft showed a couple things. It showed a route that was just north of Bismarck, a proposed route north of Bismarck, and then an approved final route north of our nation. There was no indication that Standing Rock even existed, yet the pipeline was coming 500 feet from our boundary. And if anything was to happen, we said it's going to impact us first. So we should have a say in it. We should be the ones that are determining whether or not this project is viable. When I met with the company, I had a meeting with the company. Chairman Fox was asked to go to that meeting, and he said, "I'm not going to go to that meeting with you." He said a couple of things. The way he said it is he's more colorful in the way he told him how he responded to that request. They were trying to get Chairman Fox to come with him and convince me that this is a good project. But at that meeting, I told him, "This is not going to happen. We're not putting this pipeline here." And they said that there's very little risk that this pipeline will break. So I asked then, I said, why is it that you had a route proposed north of Bismarck, but yet you come down here? And they said, well, there's concerns from the community for safe drinking water, and there's concerns for wetlands. And so I said, well, but you're telling me there's no chance that this thing's going to break, but yet you're not putting it on this route because there's a risk. When I talked to them about it, I let them know that anything that's man-made eventually will break. Not only that, when you look at what's happening in Oklahoma has man-made earthquakes. So when we see man-made earthquakes come in, and what causes these man-made earthquakes? Fracking. And what are we doing in North Dakota? We're fracking. So if there's our minimal risk of a pipeline breaking, the proposal is to go underneath water, first of all, we shouldn't even be talking about that. But second of all, if we know and if we can anticipate there are going to be earthquakes, even though they say the soil is ripe for this, the soil is good, it'll never happen, we shouldn't even be talking about it. The things that are important to us, to indigenous people, indigenous lands, our indigenous rights, we consider sacred. There's a connection there. And water is probably the most cherished item for us. We have a saying in our language, we say, "Mini Wichoni," water is life. Because it's life, we can't put it at risk. Not for just us, but for everybody downstream. There's 17 million people downstream. Technology will tell you different, science will tell you different, but a lot of times when it comes to indigenous people, we follow our hearts. And what our heart tells us is usually right. So when we got the first draft EA, they completely ignored us. The second EA came out that the Corps is ready to approve this. Right away we start saying, this is not right. You didn't consult with us. We start reminding them of all the wrongs. The permitting process is wrong. It's flawed. We have cultural historic sites out there. So when we start looking at what is the most important thing for us, what do we have to protect? We're looking out for our future, the children who are not even born yet. When we're looking out for them, what is it that they will need? It's water. So when we start talking about water, we're talking about future generations. And we got to start doing things for future generations so that they have a better life than what we have today. And it seems like all of you know what I'm talking about because you have children. You had parents. You had grandparents. And we always hear the stories of our grandparents having a life. But what they did was they worked hard so that their children can have a better life. And then what those parents did was they worked hard so their children can have a better life. And that's what it's all about, is trying to find a better life for our children, the ones that aren't even here yet. So what happened was the Corps was approving the permit. They're looking at approving the easement, so we filed an injunction. When we filed this injunction, a couple days later, there was a notice that construction was going to start in 48 hours. Even though like we're looking at all the legal angles and we're trying to figure out. I'm gonna tell you something. When I met with the Corps of Engineers, I met with the Department of Interior, I met with the Environmental Protection Agency, I met with the American Council of Historic Preservation, I met with federal agencies all over, and Department of Interior. We worked with our legal team. We were trying to figure a way how to stop this. We met with the Corps of Engineers multiple times, not consulting, but in a deliberation, trying to find out why they're approving this. We had all this stuff going on. I met with the company, and every time it seemed like I was getting pushed back. I felt like there's no way we can stop this. And I was sitting in my office one time, and there was this elder who was sitting across from me, and I was kind of feeling down. I was saying, "Man, this doesn't look good for us. What are we going to do? There's every time we go somewhere, it seems like they're not listening to us. It seems like they don't want to hear us." He said, "What they don't know is the power of prayer. What we have is prayer." Man, that. I kind of opened my eyes, and it's powerful. When we want to do something, prayer becomes a good big part of it. And when everything started building up, before it got big, we had our youth. I remember the first thing that was done. Our youth gathered down in Wakpala, South Dakota, and they said a prayer. And they said, "We're going to run for water." And they started this run. And they ran into Mobridge. They ran over the Missouri River. And then we had, at that time, it was a spiritual camp. And I remember this tent. This was back in April. There's one tent out there. And I rode horse. It was right by my in-law's home. So I rode horse through it. And there's one tent. And that was like the first day. And there was nobody down there, but I heard they're going to have a spirit camp. We got to start praying. We got to start trying to do something other than what the law is doing for us. A couple days later, there was about 5 people, and then 12 people, and it kind of fluctuated since April until we got that 48-hour notice of construction. And then overnight, here we are. It just blew up. But there were several things that took place. We had children run for water. We had a horseback ride. And every time something like this took place, we were praying. We were saying, and it was a prayer for future generations. What are we gonna do for our people? We had a motorcycle ride. We had a group that started running from the spirit camp at that time, run to Omaha. Man, I thought that was crazy. These guys are gonna run all the way to Omaha and deliver a letter to the colonel. Omaha District was the one that was permitting the project. We had our youth council and our youth group take a petition, start a petition. First they started a petition and they wanted to build awareness. And in a short period of time, they had pretty much 100,000 signatures of people, electronic positions, 100,000 people signing on, saying, "We support you, no DAPO. Hashtag respect our water." That's where we were going. It's respectourwater.com. And it was the youth who really took the leadership in this. They were the ones that had a strong voice, and a powerful voice, and it was something that they wanted to speak out about for their own kids, their future. So we, as adults and as council and as community, we started trying to support them as much as we could. Once the youth initiated everything, I think it started to go. When the kids came back from D.C., that's when everything started rolling. They came back, and then I think there was 3 days into it. I remember going, our second day into this, I remember going out there. And I remember Alice, she was leading the crew and expressing our concern over this. It's pretty cool when you could see youth actually standing up for what they believe. What we did was we had a hearing. We went to D.C. and at that time the judge was, this was I think August 24th. The judge was gonna determine whether or not we filed an injunction on them, whether or not this injunction was gonna be upheld. And on that day we believed that he was gonna give a ruling. So there was one or two ways that something can happen. The first was he would rule in our favor, and that would be all right. And when we went to court, what we were saying is this process that's in place, permitting process, the way this type of project goes, it doesn't take into account any of our concerns, or doesn't give us the opportunity to prevent our ancestral resting places, our prayer sites, doesn't give us the opportunity to protect them. So we went at that angle. Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe joined the lawsuit with us. When we went to court, that was our argument. Our argument is we need to protect our sites. We weren't consulted right, and your permitting process is flawed. So we outlined those, our argument. Of course, Dakota Access Pipeline and the Corps of Engineers had their view on it, their argument. We felt that we wanted to get an opportunity to get out in front of them and have them stop construction. Let us identify sites where there are sites, and let us determine next what to do after that. That's one way to look at this. Even though water is most important to us, our sites are important to us, and this was a legal way to have the project, have people stop and listen. The other result from the case, they could rule in their favor. So we have to start anticipating if it goes in their favor, what are we going to do next? And I wasn't expecting this, they would delay the ruling. So, and that's what happened, they delayed it. Since then, something beautiful has happened. And I want some of the people to, some of the people who are participating in the camp, we began getting support from everywhere. There's been tribal nations writing support letters, passing resolutions, donating resources to the tribe and to the camp. There's been and all along, you know, the thing that was standing out in all of this is when tribal nations come together, it's powerful, it's strong. Unity is something that's earth-shaking, and you have along with that prayer. So there are people coming up all the time, and they're saying how wonderful it is to be here. And if you haven't been to the camp, it's something that I never turned anyone away. I always welcome everybody. It's something that you can experience. It's a good feeling. And I know that we come from tribes, when we come from someplace, sometimes it's hard from where we come from. And when this whole thing was starting up, it was difficult because I had people approaching me. I had young men who came from a broken home, and they would say, "Dave, I'm here. I'm here to fight with you. I'm ready to die. I'll do anything." And I was carrying that, and it was hard. And I was thinking, man, these guys are ready to do something, lay their life online. I just had a hard time with that. I think I cried every day. Finally, my wife pulled me in, Nicole. She said, "You need to take time for yourself. You need to pray about this. You need to gather yourself. What's happening is you're changing." So when I was changing, I didn't sleep for 6 days because I was having it was driving me crazy. When I came back from that, and the next young guy that came up to me and said, "I'm here for you, I'm ready to die for you," and I said, "I don't want you to die. I want you to live now. Don't come here ready to die. You need to come here telling me you're ready to live. Look at this camp. How are we gathering? Why are we gathering? What's here? We have a place where we're gathering to pray. There's no alcohol. there's no drugs, and there's no violence. That's how I want you to live now. I want you to live without those things. And I want you to be a good parent. Or I want you to be a good son. I want you to be a good dad. I want you to be a good grandfather. That's what I want you to come here for. And we could do the same thing that you're asking to do, but it would be more powerful if you lived and if you stood there in peace and prayer. So ever since this thing... Ever since this thing started, that was our message. And it gets hard. It gets hard because we have to try to continue that and pass that message because we are angry. There are some things that disturb us, and we just, frustration is pent up for 100 years. Of all the wrongs that were done to tribes. And I get tribal, it's crazy because I get tribes coming up to me and saying, this is what they did to our water. This is how they took advantage of us. And we're here. I had a young lady come up to me. She said, 2 days ago, I'm sitting in my house. I open up my laptop and I'm watching Facebook, YouTube, social media, whatever. All of these things. And I tell my kids, get your clothes on. We're going to North Dakota. And she was from California. 2 days later, she's standing in front of me. I'm here. And I said, but what that is there's a spirit. And there's a spirit awakening in each and every one of us. And it's... And it's not just happening here, it's happening across the world. If you watch national news, you'll see here's another demonstration. There's another indigenous people fighting for their rights. So this is something that's, I think it's just time that we all start to realize what's the most important thing for us. If there's something that's infringing on that, we have to stand up. And that's what we're doing. I'll tell you one more little story. Is this elder guy came up to me, and he said he just wanted to meet me. So I shook his hand, and then he started talking about how good he feels at the camp. It's really a good feeling, and I didn't say too much. And then I said, you know, all of us need to just remain in prayer, and just think of what prayer and unity does for each and every one of us. And he said, it's healing. What's happening is healing. And I'll tell you why. He said, I just lost my 2 boys. My 6-year-old was walking across a bridge, a canal, and he slipped off and he fell in. And there was rapid water. And my older son went to get him, and both of them didn't come out. And he said, I haven't been able to do anything. It was good to hear him say that I'm glad that I'm here, and I know that I have to start getting out now, and I have to let go. So all of us have stuff that we carry. Each and every one of us have things inside of us. We have to work on them. That's what I think this camp is doing, is that it helps us look at ourselves, helps us find what is bothering us, and with prayer, we can overcome it. And then with the unity, seeing all the tribes, I think that's the most powerful thing. Every time a new nation comes in and shares a part of their culture, that unity. So if we could fix ourselves, when we go there, when we go to the camp, and when we break, we go home, we take the good that we experience and take it back into our homes. Help ourselves first, then start helping our families. A lot of times in Indian country, families are broke. They're broken. They're separated. So we have to learn how to forgive each other. That's the hardest thing to do, is forgive. And once we forgive and we pull our family together, then we can start working on our community. Why are our communities split? What causes it? And how can we overcome that? Once our communities are starting to heal, then we can work on our nations. When our nations heal, we can work on this nation, or the world, or the universe. It goes beyond, and I know that's not going to happen overnight, but I feel like something special is happening here. I think something in Indian country is changing, and no more are we going to let things happen the way they did. And as we do this, we have to go back and start looking at ourselves, and how can we fix it? We had an injunction, and then we filed a temporary restraining order because the company, Energy Transport Partners, subsidiary, the Dakota Access Pipeline, they hired a security company. We turned in some information to the court, identifying some sacred sites. So we turned it into the federal court. Federal court, the district court in D.C. gave it to the Dakota Access Pipeline. And we've been watching this company for a long time. They never work on weekends. Saturday, they go in there and they destroy every piece of that property that we had access to. And they knew what they were doing. That was our proof to the judge that there are sacred sites, that we'd never had an opportunity to be consulted. We wanted to protect them, and this permitting process is flawed. I get asked all the time, why didn't you go to the state PUC hearing, Public Utility Commission hearing, on this process? And I say, well, we have a government-to-government relationship. In this government-to-government relationship, we shouldn't have to shift through newspapers to find out when this public hearing is going to be held. Not only that, as our own tribal nation, we have our own paper. We have our own Teton Times. Was that public hearing commission, PUC hearing, advertised in our paper? It wasn't. So don't say we had an opportunity. I believe that this PUC process is ready to go. Once it hits a hearing, they already it's approved. We have to start looking at the State Historic Preservation Office. State Historic and Tribal Historic Preservation Office, we have ours to protect cultural sites, the state has theirs. They have archaeologists. We have our cultural experts that know what our spirituality is about, and some things that they look for as an archaeologist isn't always found when we what we identify, they don't ever see it. So what they'll do is they'll dig a 12 by 12 hole, and they'll look for scatter, they call it, or charcoal. And if there's not none of this there, then they'll say this site is nothing, it's cleared. But we know there's some unique things that tie to our culture. And the company and Army Corps of Engineers will always say, we ask you to go in front of us. And we say, well, there's one way to stop all of this, and that is to avoid it altogether. We were never given an opportunity to tell you, you should avoid this. You want us to come in after you have an approved route and walk in front of you, find a site so you can either mitigate it, or you can go around it, or you can go under it. We don't want to do that, because we saw that happened in Iowa. In the same pipeline, there's a significant site found. They bored under it. And what they don't understand with our culture, how we're connected. We're connected to the center of the earth. And then we come up to the surface. There's our sacred site there that connects us to the center of the earth, and it connects us to the universe. When they bore under it, it breaks that connection. So we disagree with that. We don't want that. We don't want to show them what is sacred to us so they could keep on going. So SHPO and THPO, we have to find a way to make it work better. The PUC system, the hearing system, we have to work on that and change how the state works with tribes. And I think through this whole process, we are finding ways to make sure indigenous rights, indigenous lands, indigenous people are protected. And if we can set a precedence through this whole thing, which I think we will be doing, then it's good. I would say that's a win. If anything, we are winning because of the awareness that we're building, and the way things get processed and permitted, that has to change. This company came and destroyed these sites on Saturday. Sunday, we filed a temporary restraining order to stop all construction within 40 miles of the pipeline, close to the Missouri River. this judge, so I was expecting, well, if he rules for us, this is what we're going to do. If he rules against us, this is what we're going to do. Instead, he found middle ground again. He said, anything west of Highway 1806, there's no restraining order. And that's where those sacred sites were that got destroyed. Anything east of 1806, there's a restraining order. It's granted. So it was kind of a middle ground. Part of it's good, but it's not all good, because I know that our sacred sites are still going to be destroyed. I know there's some out there, and I know that it's heartbreaking, it's sad that the company is still allowed to do this, but we just have to keep moving. We have to keep our head up. We have to stay proud of who we are, and we have to keep doing what we can with in the legal battle, and doing what we can on the ground. I think there's a lot of good, and I know you guys are probably sick and tired of hearing me, so I want to ask some of the youth that led the charge. They led this charge. They inspired all of us to do what was right. And I still believe that we're doing the right thing. There's some more. After them, I asked some people that are down at the camp if they would be willing to share some of the things that are important to know. I don't want to take all the time up. We have Gracie Claymore and Alice Brown Otter. Then I want Dallas Goldtooth, Ricardo Kate. What we're going to close with is a song. And I think you guys will all enjoy the song. So I'd ask Kenny Billingsley to come up too. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Me and Alice are here today to speak on behalf of the youth and the youth council, the runners that went on the runs to Omaha and Washington, D.C., but I'm going to let Alice talk first because her experience and her journey is way cooler than anything I could ever share.
Hi, my name is Alice Brownader, and I shake your hand with a good heart. I'm from the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, and I live in Bismarck, North Dakota. I'm 12 years old. I attend the Horizon Middle School up in Bismarck here, and I went on the run to D.C. Maybe a month ago, and it was just a good experience. It took like a little over 3 weeks, and there was 40 of us on the trip. And when we were in Iowa, there was people going by calling us tree huggers, and we're never gonna make it to DC. They're not gonna stop the pipeline. They're just bringing us down. And it brought some of the runners down too. And we really just got really sad, and but we kept going. We kept going in prayer, and we knew that Tukashilo was with us, and they were just calling us down, and they didn't know that they were going to get affected by this pipeline directly. And a lot of people didn't know when we were going through many of the states, which is pretty sad. So when we were going through, we were chanting through the towns. There was a lot of positive energy too, which was really great. There was a one-month-old on the trip, and there was a couple elderly on the trip, but it was mostly youth. I got to meet so many new people. It was just a good experience. When we got to D.C., we ran/walked to the Army Corps of Engineers headquarters. We were there for about maybe 4 to 5 hours chanting. And we knew that they were watching us, and we wouldn't stop. We may have got tired, but right after we were protesting or protecting our water, we had a meeting with them. All of the youth got to have a little minute to talk to the headquarters at the Army Corps. And we just changed a lot of their minds. They started crying, and it opened a lot of their hearts, and they listened to us, and we felt like we mattered again. And I learned so many things on the trip. It taught me that this isn't just a Native issue, it's a non-Native issue too. Just because we all have different colors of skin doesn't mean that we're different. We all have a heart. We all have blood that goes through our bodies. We're all the same, but people just choose to look at our colors instead of beyond that, which really is nothing. I'm just glad that I get the chance to do this. On the first part of the run, I never thought I'd be talking in front of people or think I'd even have a voice. I didn't think that I'd do anything, but here I am talking in front of a lot of people. I was in New York talking, and I was in DC talking. I was chanting all over the United States. And it's just really cool that I can do this. And on the first part of the run before, or when I learned about this pipeline, I was in math class. There was probably like 3 to 4 of us listening to the math, or the science teacher, I mean. He was telling us about this pipeline. Only a couple of us were listening out of like the 25 kids. And we listened. And right after that, we had speakers come in. And we started to make videos to tell people that we don't want this pipeline. And a lot of people came to sign the petition. And before we left for the run, we had 140,000 signatures. Now we have 252,000 signatures on our petition. And I just really like to thank all those people. We opened so many hearts and eyes and ears with just our young voices. We matter too. I just like to thank the people who asked me to come talk. And I'm used to be the shy person, but I'm glad I got out of my comfort zone. Ha pulami aye.
Hello everyone, my name is Gracie Claymore. I'm 19 years old. I'm Hunkpapa Lakota from the Standing Rock Nation. I grew up on the reservation my entire life. Why I'm standing in front of you guys today is to tell you about my experience following the Dakota Access Pipeline. I've been there pretty much at the camp every single day, and I've been supporting the runners since day one. I've been supporting the camp since day one, and what I can tell you all is from personal experience that the people at the camp are peaceful and prayerful, and I've always stressed that there's no words that could ever describe how beautiful it is there. It's awesome to see so many tribal nations and even non-natives coming to support us, coming to stand together with us. And when I think about that, I think about how powerful our people are and how powerful we can be when we come and stand together. I am part of the Standing Rock Youth Council, and we strive really hard to bring unity within our communities, but now I know that because there's so much unity happening in the communities and there's so many youth there that are not being afraid to share their voices, I know that after we defeat the Dakota Access Pipeline, because I know that we will, my biggest prayer, and I believe this with all my heart, that the youth that are here and the people that are here at the camp are going to take all this positive energy and all the prayers and all the experiences that we've shared here, we're going to take that back into our communities, and we're going to begin to heal again. We're going to begin to be beautiful people, because that's what we are. I strongly believe in the voices of our youth, just like Alice. It's amazing to see 12-year-olds and even 5-year-olds at the front lines chanting and praying, because they know that that's what's going to defeat this pipeline, not violence, not anything like that. So my message to everyone is to continue to pray, and no matter how you pray, no matter what you believe in, continue to pray, because like Alice said, this is not just a Native American issue, this is a human race issue. We need water to live. From the very beginning, since we were in our mother's wombs, we were in water, and we need water to live. So I just, first and foremost, want to encourage any Native Indigenous youth and non-Native youth out there to continue to share your voices and let your voices be heard. Don't be afraid to let people hear your voice, because me too, I'm standing up here and I'm scared. I don't know what to say. I am so proud of my people and everyone that has come to share this experience with us, and I just really am thankful that we're still here. From the beginning of the run, the youth built this movement, or created this movement, on peace, prayer, and unity. And they continue to stand by that because they understand the power of prayer. Our ancestors understood the power of prayer, and that's why we're still here today. They fought for us. They fought for us to be able to learn our languages, to be able to practice our ways of life. We're still here today, and that's what we want to show the world. We're beautiful and peaceful people.
My name is Dallas Goldtooth. I'm a Dakota Dene man from the Lower Sioux Dakota Nation in Minnesota. I have Hunkah relatives from Standing Rock, or part of the Hunkpapa Oyate. And I'm an organizer, the Keep It in the Ground campaign organizer for the Indigenous Environmental Network. And our organization has been supportive of the Sacred Stone Camp since its very inception, since April. And a lot of people don't know that, but the camp has been there since April. And a small, dedicated crew of pipeline fighters, water protectors, and land defenders dedicated to this fight to protect Mother Earth and our rights as Indigenous peoples. So it was really powerful to see this explosion of just support from across Indian country. And what we've seen in the camp has been amazing and beautiful in so many ways. I just came from a meeting, just literally drove up from the camp, in that we did an introduction, and there was about 50 people there, and we had Seminole folks from Florida, folks from Oklahoma, California, Washington, relatives from Alaska were there. We had Anishinaabe relatives all the way from Canada that were there. We had folks that were Shinnecock from Long Island, New York, that were there. And we had relatives from Standing Rock itself, and many other representatives of their Chetishakoi, as well as our Caucasian relatives from across the land, who came here in support. And it wasn't hate or negativity that brought them there, it was love. And that's the principle, that's the foundation of the Sacred Stone Camp, is love for the land, love for the people, love for our future generations, and love for the water above all. And I wanted to stress that I agree, like this, the mainstream media, there's been a very direct challenge with the one lack of information or the abundance of misinformation about the purposes of the Sacred Stone Camp and the water protectors that are there. And the messaging that a lot of folks have, that's first and foremost, is that we're not protesters. Get that out of your mind. We're water protectors. That's who we are. And there's this other belief that we are founded, this camp, the Sacred Stone Camp, the folks that are there are committed to prayer, committed to the sense that's rooted in our identity as a Chetishakoi people. Since the very first gifts from Pate Sawe, the white buffalo calf woman, who brought us these teachings about the way to live good. But being prayerful doesn't mean that you cannot be inactive, but rather the opposite. That when you walk with a life of prayer, that you're also committed to taking action, to act upon some of the sicknesses that might be in your community, or the negativity, or the outside influences, or negative influences that might be in your community. And that's what we're seeing, and that's what the camp's about. Nonviolent direct action. Utilizing prayer and our teachings as Ocheteshakoin, as a foundation for us to respond. Nonviolent direct action is prayerful action. It's peaceful action. Utilizing our bodies to occupy a space in a peaceful manner for our goal to stop this pipeline, to protect Mother Earth. That's the root of it, peace and love, but also action. Just as much as our communities are fighting against domestic violence or issues of economic justice or food justice, that we are rooted in prayer, but we decide to take action against that, to correct that problem. And what I love most of all is that the response from Indian country has been amazing, not only physically in donations, but people are standing up in support of protecting the water. And that this struggle that we're seeing in Standing Rock isn't just about a limited issue. It's not just about one pipeline. It's not just about the pipeline. It's about the whole system overall. It's about how the Cannonball community didn't have a choice about the routing of that pipeline. No one even talked to them about it. It's about the system that says that these things are necessary. It's about a system that, connects the environmental justice issue with our food justice issue. That the lack of our communities don't have a right to decide the quality of the food that we have at times. So what we're here in this camp and what the movement that you're seeing isn't just about one pipeline. It's about the greater fight for climate justice, food justice, and just sovereignty justice overall for our tribal nations. We have this opportunity as people, as everyday individuals, also to tribal nations, to better the world right now, and that this pipeline right here, this fight against Dakota Access, helps support that. Communities are suffering. We have relatives in Alaska down to the Gulf Coast who are literally downstream from us, who are facing a rapid sea level rise. So this pipeline, this fight against Dakota Access, is to protect the water, the natural, the beauty of this land, and the spiritual and sacred integrity of this land and the territories of the Chetishakoin, but it's also to protect the sacred integrity of Mother Earth overall. It speaks to the greater need for us to keep fossil fuels in the ground. But my call is to our tribal nations out there who stand in support of Dakota Access, who have stood up and said, hey, we stand in solidarity with Standing Rock in this fight, to also look internally to say, okay, how are we also contributing to the fossil fuel development that legitimizes and promotes this pipeline to be built? How can our tribal nations take sincere, fast, and a just transition towards renewable energy? That's the beauty of this right now, is it's opening that door to greater dialogue about where we're going as a country, as a society. This isn't just a native issue. It's not a white rancher issue. This is a human issue. And it's also an issue that's not just about protecting just one isolated area. It's also protecting future generations all over. That's why we're here, and that's why we're committed to the long run. So I thank you all. I invite each and every one of you to come to the camp. Make sure you say hi to the police barricade as they tell you to go around, which is ridiculous. And we all can agree to that, right? Right? When you get to camp, wave hi to the surveillance planes that the state are using. Say hi to them and to the Dakota Access helicopter, you know, which is, again, ridiculous. And come and see the camp for yourself. Listen to the songs. Eat the good food. But I welcome each and every one of you to witness for yourself the principles of love in action, that folks are committed to it through the use of nonviolent direct action and civil disobedience to stop this pipeline in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux Nation. I want to introduce this brother, cartoonist Ricardo. He's Santo Domingo Pueblo, New Mexico, father of three. He's from New Mexico, he's a teacher, ex-military, and Ricardo Cate is going to speak next, so give a round of applause for him. Thank you.
Okay, I was going to say the thing about us being water protectors, but thanks a lot for ruining that for me. Cross it out. All right. I'm from Santo Domingo Pueblo, and I drove 1,373 miles to be here because I didn't want to sit at home and click like and put comments after all those stories that I saw back in August, and with all these people coming out here or being out here fighting the pipeline. And so I decided I would coincide it with, I dropped my daughter off at Fort Lewis College. She's my youngest, my last one. And so, by the way, I have two wonderful kids. Actually, I have three, but only two are wonderful. Well, anyway, so I dropped her off, and it was at that one stoplight. I could either turn right to go home or turn left and come up north. And I actually cut in front of a car because I made the decision right when that light turned green. And but the first 200 miles, I was still iffy about my decision. But I got on Facebook. I have a lot of followers, and so they wanted to donate money. And so I asked them to send it to Rapid City, the Walmart. And so I was able to load up my truck. So I came up here, delivered the supplies, and my original intent was to stay here one day, deliver the supplies, maybe go back for some, but just like Dallas said, that place is phenomenal, and you have to go see it, you have to be there, you have to experience it. people are leaving, you know. Some people leave, some people go. Some people don't want to leave. I think I've said goodbye like 13 times because people would like hug in the morning, oh, okay, I'm going to leave. And that evening, at supper time, they'll be sitting there sipping coffee. I thought you left. Yeah. So yeah, So I'm up here and I'm experiencing all this stuff, and it's really funny. I go around. I'm doing a little documentary about this whole thing. So I have my little camera, and so I didn't originally set out to send cartoons from the camp. I was going to go home and then draw the cartoons. But I started seeing all this funny stuff going around camp. There was this one elderly guy and the young guy, and there's this helicopter. Every once in a while, it comes around, makes everybody nervous, right? And so the guy says, we should have a helicopter, the young kid says. And the guy says, the older guy says, well, who's going to fly it? The kid says, well, I can be a pilot. And the old man says, you want to be a pilot? Yeah. Go over there, chop some wood and pilot. I thought that was funny. So, but anyway, so I'm out here, and you know, there's natives and non-natives alike, and I always mess with everybody, I was talking to this non-native last night at a campfire. He just kind of showed up, and he's just telling me all the bad things that happened to natives. He has this knowledge of history. And he's, you know, making me depressed because he's telling me all the bad stuff that happened to us. And so I'm just listening. And then I chime in towards the end. I go, well, it's not all that bad, I told him. He looks at me, really? And I said, yeah, because every once in a while, Hollywood comes out with a film. And no matter how bad things are, Hollywood comes out with a film and it makes you feel proud of your culture. And I go, like, for natives, it was Dances with Wolves. And for Italians, it was The Godfather. For black people, it was Roots. And for white people, it was Brokeback Mountain. And he kind of looks at me, and he didn't get it right away, but I'm always messing with people. As a cartoonist, that's what I do. And so I try to spread a lot of humor, just like Dallas. I the first night I met him, I think it was the second night I was here, and I met up with him, and I'm trying to do a selfie, and I'm, you know, shooting this documentary and talking to him, but every time I pan to his face, he's doing this in the camera, and then he straightens up when I look at him, and both of us, we're there, and we're there to shed humor. So with that, I wanted to let you know that I draw the cartoon called Without Reservations. It's been in the newspaper for Santa Fe, New Mexico for 8 years. And it's the only native cartoon in the whole United States that's in a mainstream newspaper, not a tribal newspaper. But like I said, I'm going to draw a whole lot more because I didn't drive 1,373 miles just to sit back and, you know, let them, you know, have their way. Because when you're there, you, like Dallas said, come out and experience it. Come out and say hi to everyone. Come out and shake hands. There's real people out there, and these people drove, some of them, most of them, a lot of them drove even further than I did. And so I'm in here for the long haul, so... thank you very much for letting me speak to you.
Good evening. My name is Ken Manywounds, formerly Ken Billingsley. I'm a Hunkpapa Lakota from Standing Rock. I'm very thankful that the chairman has given me this opportunity, and these gentlemen and those young ladies, very eloquent speakers. That's our seventh generation right there. And it's because of them and all of the people that are down there at the camps, praying, singing, doing this in a very peaceful way, I was inspired to write this song. And the song is written not to offend anyone, but it only comes from my heart. So bear with me, but listen to the enunciation of the words. So. The white man has brought to our lands this black snake pipe to desecrate our lands. Lakota lands, Lakota lands, our father's lands. Native people are standing up to stop this black snake before it erupts, we picked up our drums and began to sing our prayer songs for our unity, We must stay strong in a peaceful way so our people can live to see another day. So frack off, you gas holes. The white man has brought onto our lands this black snake pipe to damage our lands. Lakota lands, Lakota lands, our father's lands. Our native people have heard the call. We're now united together and standing tall. The white man has no choice but to hear our words, because with oil in our water, it's really absurd, really absurd. This water must be clean for our children's sake, so we have to do away with this awful black snake. So frack off, you gas holes. White man has brought onto our lands this black snake pipe to violate our lands. Lakota lands, our father's lands. Singing and praying in our native way has brought us all together for brighter days. Our children are young and they want to grow old, and they can't drink water that's flowing with oil, flowing with oil. It's time to put an end to this ugly black snake before it's too late, for goodness sake. So frack off, you gas holes.
Thank you.
That was original music by Ken Many Wounds Billingsley, concluding a public presentation September 8th, 2016, by the Standing Rock Tribe during the 20th Annual United Tribes Tribal Leaders Summit. You also heard from Native young people Gracie Claymore and Alice Brown Otter. You also heard from Native young people Gracie Claymore and Alice Brown Otter, Indigenous environmental activist Dallas Goldtooth, and editorial cartoonist Ricardo Cate from Santo Domingo Pueblo in New Mexico. The spirit camps along the Cannonball River eventually swelled to an estimated 7,000 people in later September. Individuals representing nearly 300 Native tribes rallied in support of Standing Rock, attracting national and international attention, including solidarity protests in 40 states and worldwide. This program was produced by United Tribes Technical College Office of Public Information. Dennis Newman, Director, Alicia Heglin-Thorpe, Producer. This series is designed to improve understanding and provide insight into tribal culture and Native people. For more information, visit our website, uttc.edu.